This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. Nate Burleson spent more than a decade playing wide receiver in the NFL and gave fans some thrilling moments, even as a punt returner.
Pass the Bills punt to Burleson at the 6. Dodges a couple of tacklers. Gets away. Watch out. Burleson against Sastadil. He beat him. Nate Burleson is going all the way. Touchdown, Seattle. What a return by Nate Burleson. 94 yards. Nate Burleson's third career punt return for a touchdown.
After being cut by the Cleveland Browns in 2014, Nate Burleson decided to move his talents into the broadcast booth. It was a wise move. He's now ripping it up as an analyst and co-host of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. He's also a CBS NFL Today analyst. The former University of Nevada star is now one of the most entertaining announcers in the sport. Let's head to the SI.com offices in New York City and meet Nate Burleson on Sports Jam. You're now living in New Jersey, in Ridgewood. How'd that come about?
Well, I got the nod to get the CBS job, and I thought to myself, you know, I got to start digging my heels into the ground here in Jersey. I sold my home in Arizona, which my wife kind of begrudgingly went along with. Her being an Arizona native, I said, baby, we're here. We're not going anywhere. My oldest son, little Nate, is going to be in high school after this year, so figure we got to get in a location where they're going to be zoned for high school. And I heard they got a good school. It's a little further out for me in the morning in the cities, but I leave for work at 4:15 a.m. I'll take a longer ride to get my kids to be a little bit more comfortable. So, yeah, I'm a Jersey native now, I guess you can say. I got my Jersey license. I yell at people when I'm in the car. You know, I'm quite rude when people walk up. No, I'm joking. I haven't adopted all those characteristics of being a New Yorker yet, but I definitely am an East Coaster, and it's official. I'll be out here for quite some time.
I'm the guy that's a little bit obsessed with fashion, as you know. I love swag. You know what? I just like to look good. I like to feel good.
Well, you are all about swag. I was watching this week on Good Morning Football, and your segment about 5 different wide receivers was, how can I get my swag back? Wide receivers who maybe didn't have their best season last year, and you're giving us advice on what they have to do. I love the segment. Easy Dez for Dez Bryant. For Brandon Marshall, practice your martial arts. I love that. You like to use words like that, so I'm going to turn it on you.
Okay.
All right? To me, Nate stands for never give up, never underestimate what you can do. And that means when you not only were in high school as a state champion when it came to the 300 meters, but on the field in the NFL and in college at Nevada, but also in the booth. Never underestimate what you're going to have as your segment on Good Morning Football. A stands for, using some of your language, all in. You're pretty much all in everything you do, and then I'm going to have you talk about this. T stands for talent. You have to have talent. You had it. Amazing career on both the college and NFL levels. But I think the big one for you is E. And that's entertaining. You have been entertaining in the locker room for years when people got to you after games, and you have been wonderful on television. Nate seems to fit you, doesn't it?
Listen, I appreciate that. I do a lot of interviews, and that was the first time somebody's done that. So kudos to you. I got goosebumps under my suit. So thank you. You know, those words and phrases, they apply. You know, never give up is something that I take with me, and I try to, you know, make sure people understand that it hasn't been an easy road. You know, you fight for everything that you want in life. I got in. I was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, and I was on a team that had Randy Moss. So, you know, I wasn't supposed to be a superstar receiver on a team that already had a superstar receiver, but you just keep fighting and you wait for your opportunity. You know, my dad always said, you can knock on the door, you can ring the doorbell, but sometimes you got to kick that thing down, and it's not going to come when you want it, but when it comes, it's going to be right on time. As far as being all in, that's it. You know, you have to be fully invested in everything you do. When I go talk to these kids, I tell them, you know, you can't have a dimmer on your life. You can't dim success. When you look at the best in the game, Tom Brady, Steph Curry's, LeBron's, these individuals, the Bryce Harper's in baseball, they don't have a dimmer. In application to these kids, if you go to math class and you're not good at math, you can't say, I'm gonna dim it today. Or your mom says, hey, I need you to clean up. I'm gonna dim it today. You know, I don't like poetry, so I'm not going to pay attention to language arts. I'm going to dim it today. No, because if you dim it in certain areas, when you want to turn your light on the field, on the diamond, on the court, it's going to be dim. That's just the way it is. You got to practice it always. And, you know, I grew up loving 90s, 90s everything, 90s music, 90s NBA, 90s football, and the legends that I watched, the Barry Sanders, the Emmitt Smiths, the Walter Paytons, the Michael Jordans, you know, these guys never gave up. The Larry Birds, they were as tough as nails. Magic Johnson, it was every day they approached it with passion. And having talent, you know, I can humbly say thank you, but it's being a rookie again and feeling like an infant in a business where there's big dogs. And I know we'll get to it because I'm working with a CBS crew and those are the big dogs. But I have talent, but you still got to work on it. You got to nurture it because, you know, hard work beats talent, as we all know, all of the time. But if you're talented and you work hard, you can have great results. And entertainment, like I said, I grew up loving hip-hop and R&B. I love music, pop culture. So I want to deliver the sport of football in a way that my generation, the younger generation, can identify with it. And if that has pop culture references or me talking about a feud between musicians in relation to Kyrie and LeBron in Cleveland, or, you know, trying to make an assessment between Tom Brady's talent and Jay-Z and the longevity of them two, and there's a group of kids that'd be like, oh, I get it. That makes sense to me. That's how I look at things. And if I'm on a stage, on a show, NFL Network, CBS, would they allow me to do that and be myself? You know, it's a younger, fresher way of doing it. And I'll give you traditional. I'll put on a tie, wear a suit, and I'll give you X's and O's, and I'll break down the game, and I'll tell you exactly what to look for when your eyes are on the tube on Sundays. But in between time, in the meantime, I can also give it in a way that a 9-year-old can walk to school and be like, oh, man, I heard Nate talking about Russell Wilson and how he's more elusive than a Pokemon. You know, maybe he can go to school and have a better understanding of what I mean when Russell Wilson is in the pocket. So it's little things like that that kind of, I guess, make me entertaining to some.
And certainly entertaining. You know, I'm watching the show and I'm saying, not only are you doing powerful interviews, that I saw your interview with Walter Jones talking about the late Cortez Kennedy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But entertaining, it's not a gimmick for you. It's who you are. Drama and music were, as you mentioned, a part of your life. Drama as well.
Yeah.
So your background, definitely, and your family and your faith, yeah, has all made the makeup of Nate Burleson.
100%. Yeah, you've definitely done your research. I tried to get involved in everything. I remember when I was young, I wasn't the fastest or the strongest. So I remember watching fifth grade tape of me playing basketball. This is like a handful of years ago. I'm with my mom and dad, and we pop in this tape, and, you know, we all have an inflated view of ourselves. So I'm thinking, oh, let me pop in this tape and see myself dominate. I must have missed 14 layups in a row, and not like off the rim. Like, it was hard off the backboard. I looked at my mom and dad, I said, why didn't y'all tell me I was terrible? And they're like, baby, we couldn't tell you. We didn't want to hurt your feelings. So it's me being very aware of who I am. You know, I didn't get it the easy way. You know, as I got older, you know, I had to do all these different things. So I did drama class, and I stayed after school. And even though I couldn't sing, I sung in the choir. And I fell in love with poetry, started writing, and then I wanted to be a rapper. So all these different elements and things that make me Nate Burleson is exactly what I could bring to the table. So I don't have to force being entertaining when, you know, how I see things is a very intriguing way, and that comes across as entertaining on TV.
An example of his rap right here.
Caught a game in D.C., it flew right back. When I landed, Kirk had me yelling,
you like that?
Panthers keep pounding, no more ignoring. Cam kept dancing because Cam kept scoring. Big Ben and Antonio, them boys the truth. He throw it up like, what can Brown do for you? Larry Fitz told Father Time, not yet, homie. He went off like Romo's shoulder. My bad, Tony.
Now, you played hoops against the likes of Jamal Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
So you knew early whether you were going to be an NBA player. What was it like to play against a superstar like that?
And he was one of those guys that was extremely locked in on basketball. Him and my brother. My brother played for the Minnesota Golden Gophers, and he played a couple years with the Bobcats, and they were the same age. Jamal went on and still does have an amazing NBA career. But I remember waking up in summertime, and all I wanted to do was go outside and play. I just wanted to drink soda, go outside and play. And they're like, no, let's watch Michael Jordan come fly at me one more time. I'm like, man, we already saw it like 12 times this week. No, let's watch it one more time. And they would sit in front of that TV and just watch it, like barely blinking. I'm thinking, why is this better than being outside? Why is this better than us going and eating some food? But to them, it was a true basketball Jones. Like, that was everything. Basketball to Jamal Crawford and my brother Kevin, that was like food. It was like air to them. And I joke about it all the time. If I had the work ethic of my brother and Jamal Crawford, I would be a Hall of Famer in football, because that was the first time I saw individuals fall in love with a sport, which I didn't think was possible, like a real relationship with the sport. I didn't learn that until I got older. I got to college, and I remember looking back thinking, man, now I know how my brother felt. I understood why he sacrificed so many things for the sport of basketball. And if you can get kids to understand that, and not just apply it to sports, but to different things, like, they can get so much out of themselves. But you got to be willing to fall in love with it. And as we know, love is fickle. So you're going to get your heart broken. But you got to dust yourself off and jump right back in that relationship. Because eventually, if you stick with it, just like a good relationship, the results, they're amazing.
I have a feeling a lot of those qualities inside Nate come from his family. You can see, if you go online, there's an article about the Burlesons being the first family of Seattle sports, and that goes way back. Your dad, of course, was a star player at the University of Washington, also played in the CFL and USFL. Oh, I love the USFL days. I loved going into the locker room and New Jersey Generals and all that. Your brother, Kevin, of course, you already mentioned, played with the Bobcats. Your brother, Lindell, played college hoops. And Al Jr., your brother, played football. Yeah. What a family. But mom was the one that said, I want my sons to be entertainers. So does she get the credit for Good Morning Football?
100%. And she still does. My mom will, she'll call me and be like, son, you look so handsome today. And what you said was so great today. And I'm like, oh, thanks, mom. You know, you turn into a little kid. I'm 36 years old and I feel like an 11-year-old while I'm on the phone with her. And then she pauses and she says, but when are you going to be in a movie? And I'm like, mom, I got to tackle one thing at a time, okay? No. But I know. You know what's going to happen, right, Nate? I'm like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. Okay, well, let me know when you start reading scripts. So, yeah, mom, she's always been promoting that. She's been the one that always had a fine balance between the relationship we have with people here on earth, the relationship we have with sports, and then the relationship we have with entertainment. And that's kind of where I get, I guess, the side of me that always wants to be on the stage.
They had me working out with J.J. Watt's trainer, Brad Arnett, and I walk in, and I'm like, this is the guy that trains J.J. Watt.
I mean, that's hollow ground. Those pectorals, those lats. That's his work.
That's
that
his work.
Terrifying.
It's like his David.
He's
been,
who is it? It's Adele's voice coach?
Yeah, it's like Adele's voice coach. You're J.J. Watt's trainer?
No, you're right.
That's amazing.
He's been working out with J.J. Watt since J.J. was 15, 16 years old. You know, I had to ask him, like, well, what do you do with J.J.? He said, it's all about nutrition, hydration, and speed. And I was like, well, is it specific to being a defensive lineman? He said, no. J.J. does everything. Uh-huh. He runs routes.
Let's talk about your interviewing skills. We're here with Nate Burleson on Sports Jam. We're in New York City. Your interview that you had this week with Hall of Famer Walter Jones, talking about the late Cortez Kennedy, the Seattle Seahawks great. One of your first questions is why I like your interviews. It wasn't football. It was, I want to know what Cortez Kennedy was off the field. Much like Sports Jam, we want to know what's inside. You like getting those kind of things, right?
Yeah, there's a reason why I'm enjoying this interview thoroughly, is because I see a lot of elements in which you approach interviews, and that's what I try to do. Oftentimes, we'll have guests in, and it's a football show, so right out the gate, let's talk football. And one of my notes to my cast, to the production team, says, as a football player, I want to feel comfortable when I'm talking to somebody. So one way to get them to relax and kind of break down them barriers is to talk about something that's not as serious as football. You know, it's as simple as how are you doing, how you feeling, where you been, and if I know you, I can make it even more personal. So talking to Walter Jones and knowing that Cortez Kennedy and the Check 96 initiative was to, you know, his jersey number, and on September 6th, take that day to reach out to a former teammate, which I think is just absolutely genius. Because as athletes, we get so locked in on being in the moment and living, and we like to say ride or die for our teammates, right? We bleed and we sweat and we cry with these guys. Like, sometimes the guys you're in the locker room with are closer than your actual blood, but then afterwards they disappear. You disappear, they disappear, life gets in the way, sometimes tragedy gets in the way, and we forget. And we forget really how close we were. And I love the fact that Walter Jones is saying, you know, because Cortez Kennedy meant so much to me as a friend, you know, this is why I'm doing it. And I thought to myself, wow, that's amazing. And he kept talking and saying, you know, he would just call me out the blue. And how often does that happen nowadays? It doesn't happen enough. You know, oftentimes when you make a phone call, it's either because you need something for somebody or there's a motive behind it. And half the time people are calling us and we're screening the call because we feel like what we're doing is so much more important. But Walt kind of brought me back down to reality. I hope to everybody listening that, you know, we need to take not just September 6th in honor of Cortez Kennedy, check 96 to check on people, but we just do it more often. Because we all know, man, this life is fleeting and it can go so fast. And before you know it, somebody's gone. And the first thing we say is, I wish I would have reached out more.
Who's due a phone call from Nate Burleson that you haven't talked to in a long time that you should have reached out to?
That's a tough question. You know, I would say every receiver that I was on the team on that came after me. And by that, I mean the young guys that I mentored. When I got in the league, Randy Moss was there, Marcus Robinson was there. These guys taught me give back to the younger generation. And there's athletes, as we know, that can care less about the guy trying to take their position. These receivers, I remember them saying back when I was a young guy, there's enough food on the table for everybody to eat. And I just thought, wow, that's a powerful way to look at it. And I'm not a selfish guy by nature, so I adopted that. And every receiver I played with that was younger than me, which was there to take my position because they're younger, faster, stronger, and cheaper, I embraced them. I mean, I gave them every tool I can give them. One, because if I beat them out while giving them everything they needed, it built my confidence. But two, it just makes you feel good when you're helping somebody. And they can genuinely, a grown man with millions of dollars can look at you and say, thank you. Like, that means more than anything. But as we're talking in this check initiative, like, those same guys who looked at me as big brother and will call me big brother, like, I'm pretty sure they would love to hear from the big brother. So to answer your question, it would be all those young wide receivers that I mentor. Like, I should check in with those guys much more often.
And cheaper. Football is a business. That's what it's about. Yeah. And you knew that going into playing all those seasons that you had with the Vikings, Seahawks, Lions. Eventually that day came that you had to leave the field after being cut by the Cleveland Browns. Yep. I heard you mention it this week, that what it felt like to walk off that field, and you're curious what in Hard Knocks, what those Tampa Bay Buccaneers players, after they get cut, what did it feel like? I got cut from the baseball team at Penn State 2 days before the season started. I know what that felt like, but you had an amazing career before that. So what was that day like?
It was tough. It was a hard pill to swallow. You know, I spent, you know, three different stints with three different teams with three different contracts, being a guy that really didn't have much worry about losing his position, let alone being released. And then I get to Cleveland, you know, coming off a season in Detroit where I put up 40 catches in half a year because I got injured. And my agent is saying, listen, last year you played half the season and get 40 catches. If you do the math, you can put up 80, 90 catches on any team you play with. I'm like, all right, cool, we'll give it one more shot. I go to Miami, go to Cleveland. Cleveland signs me. I love what they got going on. I think Josh Gordon is a phenomenal athlete. He falls in the line of great receivers I play with next to Randy, Calvin. Here's Josh Gordon. Thinking, this is perfect. This is going to be great. It's a great way for me to end my career. I always had something for the underdog. The glitz and the glamour in Miami were great, but I liked the fact that I could be part of something and turn something around. And then I break my arm and tear my hamstring, and I remember the day the cuts were there because once we hit the last preseason game, I had limped my way through the game and had about four or five catches. I remember the media walking in and saying, Nate, we're glad you played. You were almost out the whole preseason. And usually they don't keep guys at your age. But today, even though you're banged up, you showed enough for them to keep you around. I said, I don't know. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know. If I was the GM, I don't know if I'd keep me. You know, it's a price tag. It's $1 million tag on a vet as my minimum. There's young guys that are cheaper, that are really talented. If you're trying to turn the page and, like, bring fresh talent in, why would you keep Nate Burleson? And they're like, well, you didn't look at it that way, but I guess maybe we should start considering the fact you might not be around. I go home, I'm sitting in my condo at the time, and I get a call. I said, hey, Steve Farmer, I'd like to talk to you, bring your playbook. You know, you're going to be released. First time I ever heard those words. And it was hard for me to swallow because there were moments in training camp where I felt fantastic. I mean, I showed out. I'm like, I don't think these guys can stop me. I still got a few more years in this league. I was 33 at that time, like really hitting the height of my athletic ability. And then I walk in that office and they're like, look, Nate, we gotta cut ties. You're banged up. Your hamstring really isn't healed up, so we don't know when you're really going to be healthy. If we keep you around, you'll be a $1 million tag after September 1st. So you know, we're sorry. And he's doing the whole apology thing. And I said, man, you ain't got to explain it to me. I get it. Like, I'm a grown man. I understand the business side of it. Now, was I hurting? Yeah. Ego damaged? Yeah. Confidence shaken? Of course. And then he said, Steve's like, hey, can I ask you a question about, you know, a couple of these wide receivers I'm considering keeping it? And I said, yeah. And I got up from my seat, put my backpack down, and I sat there for about 45 minutes. And we talked about these young guys that were the reason why I was being released. And he kind of dapped me up and said, hey, I appreciate most guys wouldn't do that. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? Burn a bridge, get my feelings because of business, of football got in the way? Or I can man up and move on. And yes, I could have came back and played. Two teams called me after that, the Atlanta Falcons, Seattle Seahawks. And I went into TV. And a lot of it was a combination of things. I'm not even sure if I've even said this to people. A lot of it was understanding, okay, at some point I got to open this chapter, right? There's not a lot of big names retiring this year at this time, so I can get in TV right now and make my mark. And I tell myself that's majority of the reason why I walked away. But also was in my feelings. For the first time, confidence has wavered. And I didn't want to go to another team and then tell me that wasn't good enough. So I never had to hear it my whole life. So one time is enough for me. Now, if I could do it all over again, would I do it? No, I still wouldn't go back and play. Because I don't want to hear those words. I wanted to open a new chapter and earn people's love and have them, you know, praise me for improving as a TV personality. So, yeah, that experience was something that kind of helped me become who I am and helped me deal with some demons. You know, it basically taught me no matter how old you get, how comfortable you are, everybody's expendable. And if you don't come with it, then, you know, you can be subjected to being released too.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle, and my guest is Nate Burleson, the former NFL wide receiver and now co-host of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. You can see Nate from 7 in the morning till 10 each and every weekday. He's also an analyst for CBS's NFL Today show. Let's head back to New York City in the offices of SI.com and find out more about Nate Burleson.
Well, I have a note on my notes here, Ronnie, that if Calvin doesn't play, somebody's got to step up and make those plays he typically does. Well, it looks like Nate Burleson's the guy stepping up to the task. Your number one receiver is out. He's active. He's not playing. Nate Burleson's the guy taking up and taking that mantle.
Let's talk about your best day on the NFL field. What was that?
Ooh, my best day was being in Seattle. I spent a couple years trying to find my footing. My first year, I tore my thumb and didn't tell anybody. And I struggled, couldn't catch the ball, to the point where a store reached out to me, an eyewear store reached out to me and said, hey, do you need glasses? Because they thought I couldn't see the ball. But really, I couldn't grip it with my left hand, so I just quietly just went through this year, just taking the beating. People tell me I was a bust. And I just embraced it. I was like, okay, all right, you don't make no excuses. Don't say nothing about your injuries. Show up next year, earn your spot, prove that you're one of the best on the team, and kick ass. I did that season and had some ups and downs within that year. And there was one particular game we're playing against Cincinnati Bengals. I drop a ball in the back of the end zone. I try to drag my feet, and as I'm holding onto the ball, my hand slam on the ground pops out. It's a drop to me. Got to deal with the suck of that. There's another seam route right over the top. Matt Hasselbeck throws it. Beautiful ball. Just to my fingertips. Should have caught it. Now, basically, I dropped two of the biggest plays in the game. And I'm thinking, oh, man, here we are. Just when I won the confidence back of this crowd, here they are booing me again. This is my home city. This is the people that I love. You know, when I think of playing in front of Seattle, I imagine, like, every teacher that I've ever had and every friend that I've ever in the crowd. I'm like, oh, man, I'm losing them. Fourth quarter comes around. We're down. I'm on the left side. It's cover two. Matt Hasselbeck throws me a look. He's like, you know what? I'm trying to squeeze it in there. And we got go routes on the outside. He looks at me. That ball is dipping, and it is spinning like something I've never seen, a beautiful spiral. And I see the safety coming over the top, trying to get in front of me. I already beat the corner. He's trailing. He got the big guys because, you know, I have a step on him. Ball drops right in my hands, and I catch it no problem. No confidence, shaking, just boom. And I'm three steps from the end zone. I get in, I take a shot from the safety, and I run over to the suite where my family was at. and it's my wife's standing there, and I give her the ball, blow her a kiss, and that was kind of like my redemption moment. I've had some great highlights, but a game-winning touchdown after dropping two, it really just defines life for you, for so many people. You have moments where you just don't feel good, and you want to crawl into a hole. But if you're willing to stick with it, life's going to present you with an opportunity to redeem yourself every single time. So that was one of my favorite moments.
And your wife, Atoya, and your three kids now living with you in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Let's talk about chemistry on the set. You're used to having chemistry on the field with certain players and whatnot. Kay Adams, Peter Schrager, Kyle Brandt, the co-hosts of this show. How's it been over the past 2 years now? Does it take time to mold chemistry?
Oh, 100%. It takes time. When we first started the show, the first day we walked in, I was unfamiliar with half of the group. I knew Peter, but never worked with him. And Kyle and Kay, I had no idea of how talented they really were. And I remember the first episode of the first show, we're just sitting there awkwardly, coming out of breaks, silent, looking at each other, looking at the camera, just trying to figure it out. Because we were trying to be what we thought the show needed to be. And that was four people talking about football and being very informative. But really, it's much more than that. It's a morning show. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be light. You're supposed to have jokes. Whoever's watching you, whether they're in their office, a kid on his tablet, a mother on her phone, or somebody sitting at home eating pancakes and eggs, they want to smile. Like, football's supposed to be fun. And that's what Chris Collinsworth came on and said. He said, football's supposed to be fun, and that's what you guys do. And once we caught that rhythm, that's when it all changed. That's when we got to know each other. Because then we got to know, like, the real us. And the real us, the real Kay, the real Kyle, real Peter, hilarious. And I think we should laugh majority of the time. You know, of course, we're going to give you the news when we need to. This week has been very serious. Hurricane Harvey has hit Houston, and we had to deliver that message in a way that was respectful to those dealing with that. Zeke Elliott, in that situation he's dealing with in Dallas. You got to deliver in a very respectful way. But we find our moments as a cast to kind of be goofy.
Me and KB, we do what we do.
We go on.
We go rogue. So this is the first one. We're out there, and right, we're moving around. And as you can see, I almost get hit by one of the flag twirlers that are walking down the street. I'm not really paying attention. Boom! But here's the thing. Look, KB, he doesn't even see the fact that I almost got my head taken off.
It's good for people in their 30s to, you know, act like goofballs. I think it's great TV. And if we can mix in, you know, great football and be informative, you know, that makes it all worthwhile. So, yeah, the chemistry, it's taken, I would say, about 6 or 7 months. But once we caught that stride, it's the one thing people say. They don't talk about the news. You can research that. You can Google that. They talk about the chemistry. People would rather watch four people with chemistry talk about nothing than four strangers who have no chemistry be very informative. It's a very simple, you know, recipe for us.
Absolutely true. Somebody who's done a morning show, Gary Walker's morning show on WBGO, and being his newsman for more than 20 years, we know that jazz is serious to people, but we have to be light too, you know, at times. Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk about, a lot of people think because you played the game, it's easy to be an analyst. But as I watched the replay of the post game of the Super Bowl, there you have Terry Bradshaw interviewing Tom Brady and saying, "You were the first quarterback to win 5 Super Bowls." When Terry won 4, you have to analyze, critique, interview fellow teammates that you played with, new players. How difficult is it to be real? I mean, do you find yourself checking yourself at times?
100%. When I first started in 2014, I was working in L.A. doing Total Access and doing pre- and post games for Thursday Night Ball. And I remember one of my mentors, Mark Watts, he said, "You need to say something." He said, "You're tiptoeing the line too much. I get it. You just got out of the game. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But you'll earn the respect more if you say something. You can be critical without, you know, being damaging to who they are, their character, or their name." And it still took time because it was like a jump rope that was too fast for you. I was just sitting there like, "I don't know when to jump in." But then I started talking, and I started being honest and being critical. When I saw something I wanted to address, I addressed it. You know, you're right, though. You have to talk to teammates. You have to talk to people that you played against. You have to be honest. You have to be able to praise and be critical. But with all that, I think you got to have a ton of humility. And if you have a ton of humility and you can approach it as such, set your ego aside, you can be a fan in the moment, but you also can be critical in the moment if you have humility. And if you're humble in how you approach somebody, then you can sit and talk with Tom Brady and call him the GOAT and not feel like you're a fanboy. And if you're humble and have humility and don't feel like you're too much above, you know, approaching somebody about making a mistake, then you can do that without sounding like you're tearing them down. So I think humility is like the common thread between all these qualities of being on TV and being a former player. You see it all the time. You see some guys and you're like, what are you talking about? Like, are you going to say anything worthwhile today? And then you see other guys that they're just the compliment sandwich. It's all compliments all day long. I like to do a blend. I'm going to give you a compliment, but if there's something that needs to be said about how you're playing, how you're acting, what you're doing, and it's me being critical, I'm going to say that. And I've walked up to guys in the offseason and said, hey, how did I handle what you went through? I saw Geno Smith in New York. We were out at a dinner, and I said, man, let me ask you a question. You know, the whole locker room incident, you getting punched, and then you getting in the game and not playing as well as people wanted you to. Everybody tore you down, and you were like the butt of all jokes. People were cracking jokes and really tearing you up. Let me know if you saw me being lumped into that group. How did I handle it? He said, man, you handled it well. He said, everything that happened in the locker room, you handled it like a former player. You spoke about it in a respectful way. And then on the field, I wasn't playing well. And you let that be known. But you also were encouraging and said, you know, next time I get an opportunity, I'm going to take advantage of it. And that right there was like a relief off my shoulders. And it allowed me to be even more comfortable and more honest when a guy that you know has been through it and seen both sides of media build him up and tear him down, he's like, you handled it the right way. That was great to hear. So roll on that line, blood. Chevy smoking down, 7.5 on that line, blood. Got a heart of gold, team that arrived. Well, you're back to my roots and my steel-toed boots, like. So roll on that line, blood. Chevy smoking down, 7.5 on that line, blood. Got a heart of gold. You handle your business with a swag. You talk about swag as, you know, the way you dress. You know, you're sharp, you're a handsome guy, you're an articulate guy. Is it all part of the lion blood clothing line, the swag? You know, just give us a brief update. You know, this clothing line that you started in Detroit has really, really gone nationwide and global now. Yeah, it has. I'm a Leo. I was born August 19th, and my mom, who, you know, calls me the cub because I cuddled with her until I was like 11 years old. So I always felt like this little lion spirit inside me. And I went from being Simba to Mufasa as a player. I thought I wanted to embrace it. I wanted to create a clothing line that spoke on that. And that's exactly it. You know, you wake up and you conquer your jungle. I don't care what your job is. You could be an athlete. You could be a teacher. You could be a politician. You could be a rapper, a musician. It doesn't matter. If you wake up and conquer the jungle that you're in, then like you're a true lion or a lioness for that day. And if you do that every day, then you will be the king of your jungle. And that's my brand in a nutshell. So once I started it, it was actually a hashtag when I got to Detroit, and then people took to it, like lion blood, man, that's clever. And I was like, well, that's me. I got lion blood in me. And I think it all came full circle when Reggie Bush, who is like a walking superstar in every locker room he goes into, he joined the Lions, and he was, after he signed, he said, oh, I'm just glad to be here. Can't wait to get started. Hashtag lion blood. And I met him in the locker room, and I had a lion blood shirt on. He's like, hey, yo, do you know the owner of that brand? Can you hook me up? I'm like, yeah, I'll hook you up, bro. He's like, yeah, but like, how much could you give me? Cause I got you. Like, I got you. He's like, well, I'm just saying, if you know him, then like, I got you. I know the owner. And everybody's kind of looking like, Nate, what? Cause I'm not the guy to walk around and be like, check my brand out. And I'm like, well, look, it's my brand. He's like, what? It's your brand? I was like, yeah, it's my brand. I created the clothing line. He's like, you got a clothing line? I'm like, yeah, it's lion blood. He said, man, I was just hashtagging that because I saw all the people in Michigan hashtagging it. So it kind of took off and had a life of its own. And right now we're still thriving. We're in some stores in Michigan. We're making this national, international push to go bigger and better and badder. And we got some great stuff coming up in the fall and winter. So look out for lion blood.
Two more questions. Speaking of bloodlines, your family, we talked about the great bloodline of your dad and your brothers all playing sports. It was back in several years ago, more than a decade ago. Bobby Floyd is one of my broadcasting students at Bloomfield College, and she wanted me to ask you, the bench press contest that you had in the garage?
That's a great question.
If it was held today, and maybe just tell us a little bit about that, and if it was held today, how would Dad fare?
So my dad is a beast. He was one of those guys that when he got done playing, he would work out with his boys in the garage. They pull the bench press out on a sunny day, and they're out there with their feet kicked up doing the weights. And the little kid's literally like a Superman lifting a house right in front of you. And as he got older, he would joke about how he's always going to be the strongest one. I thought, no, you're not going to be the strongest one. I get in the league, and what my dad gave me was great genes. I could run, I could jump, intelligent, you know, good looking. I got all these great genes, but he didn't pass along one thing, and that is the chest. I have a bird chest. It is proud, and this cage can't lift anything. And I tried, like literally tried as hard as I could to catch him, and because he's just so grown man strong, he would dominate. The only one that could compete with him was, oddly enough, my little brother and then my brother Kevin. And every single summer I go home when the family's all together or a big day like a Super Bowl, NBA championship, we're all together, we find our way to the garage. It's never really planned, but we know it's going to happen. And Pop gets out there and he pushes those weights. And he's usually tap dancing around anywhere from 17 to 21. And me, I can barely lift 8 at 225. So he knows it, and that's the one thing he knows is better than his boys. And he always said, he said, I'll never lose a title. I will retire before I let you guys beat me. So now he's getting up there in age, and he's contemplating, you know, hanging up the belt, because as we get older, we get a little bit of that grown man strength. So, yeah, no, it's a great question, because it's one of those moments as grown men, we get to sit back and enjoy each other's company and talk trash. You know, the one memory that sticks out to me, I remember being a sophomore in high school. My dad wakes me up on his birthday. Wake up! And I'm like, it's too early. Like, what are you talking about? We got another hour. Wake up! Come downstairs. Grab the camera. This is old school shoulder, like, boombox camera. And he got 350 on the bench. And I'm like, what? To me, it looked like he was lifting all the weight in the world. And he knocks it out. And I'm like, my dad's the strongest man in the world. You know, because it, to me, it was just so powerful seeing him do that early in the morning. And that was kind of like the one thing that sparked my interest in trying to beat him. But he's the best.
And don't forget, he was an all-Pac-8 safety, too. It's not like he was a defensive lineman or anything like that. So last question is, I teach broadcasting at both Bloomfield College and Brookdale Community College. What's your advice for young budding broadcasters? To me, it seems like you're going to say, be yourself.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Be yourself and know that nothing has happened by mistake. And what I mean by that is your life up to this point. Like, who would have thought this, you know, skinny, tall, goofy kid that loved movies and cartoons and listened to old records, R&B, hip-hop, and slow music, country, rock and roll, because he's from Seattle, even grunge music, would grow up years later to not be a football player, but more importantly, leave football, walk into a studio and be able to reference all these silly things that really seemed frivolous as a youngster. So I say be yourself, but realize like what you've went through in your life is the biggest strength you have in broadcasting, whatever it is, whether it's turmoil, whether it's nothing but, you know, great living and promise that you've been through, whether you have these very unique interests, you know, maybe you're in love with, you know, philanthropy. Maybe you're in love with birds. Whatever it is, you're going to be able to use that stuff. I never would have thought some of the things that I grew up loving, I could use today in reference, and they're relevant. So that blows my mind today. So that's my biggest bit of advice. Everybody's going to say be yourself, but take it a step further and use yourself. Like, dig deep within who you are and what you've been through. And use that when you're in front of the microphone or behind the camera or writing a script or producing a segment. Every little bit counts, and that's what makes you special. That's why you got the job. That's why you got the internship. That's why you are where you are, is because of what you've been through.
I have a feeling that's what he tells all three of his athletic children as they head into their careers. And your wife also is a track star just like you were. All the success that you had at Nevada to the NFL, but in 2012, you went to broadcasting camp. Maybe that was the best decision you ever made, because you are doing it on TV right now. Nate Burleson, the NFL Network analyst. You can also see him on CBS. But Good Morning Football, you'll see him on weekday mornings. That's the Emmy-nominated Good Morning Football Show. And you are a delight to meet.
Yeah.
And I wish you the best of success with the show. Keep it going, Nate. I'll be rooting for you even more than I did when you were playing in the NFL.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'll tell you what, this is the best interview because I've never sat down with somebody and they were so thorough about everything that they asked me. That truly makes me feel good sitting down here talking to you. You got to end it with a little bar, a handshake, but I'll say this, man. I appreciate you checking me out on TV to see me flow. I'm doing my thing on WBGO.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the past podcasts by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.